Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
To Today's Issues, Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined by my co-host, the remarkable, the outstanding, the never average, ordinary, or mediocre, Ray Pritchard. I should say Dr. Ray Pritchard.
Oh, Ed, it's good to hear your voice. And, you know, I joined the broadcast just to hear how you're going to introduce me. It's always an unexpected adventure.
Well, listen, I'm wearing out the thesaurus, I can assure you. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. KeepBelieving.com is his website. We'll give him an opportunity later in the program to tell you what you can find there when you go to Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, we've got a bunch to talk about, and we're going to start off the first hour with Fire Away with Kirby Anderson, who's president of Probe Ministries, host of Point of View, the Point of View broadcast, heard weekdays on AFR at 10 p.m. Central, Saturdays 3 p.m. Central Time. Kirby, welcome to Today's Issues today.
Ed and Ray, great to be with you today.
Well, we've got a bunch to talk about. Folks, if you're going to tune in later on in the program, next hour we're going to have New York Times bestselling author Robert Spencer, who's director of Jihad Watch. He's going to be talking about, what a great title for a book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. So you want to know something about Iran, we're going to have Robert Spencer on to talk about that. But we get Kirby Anderson with us periodically. I don't know if we do this just once a month, Kirby, or what, but we do regularly have Fire Away with you, and we just kind of pick your brain. So are you kind of ready to go?
I am ready.
All right.
We got a lot to talk about today.
We do have a lot to talk about. Folks, one of the issues we're going to talk about with Kirby won't be initially. We're going to wait till after the bottom of the hour break for this, but folks, your U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, so the federal government, the Obama administration, has just released what one news agency is calling a terrifying report that lays the groundwork for legal persecution of Christians in America. We are not kidding. We're going to be talking about a report issued by the Commission on Civil Rights. It's titled Peaceful Coexistence: Reconciling Non-Discrimination Principles with Civil Liberties. But it says, this report, that the phrases religious liberty and religious freedom remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any form of intolerance. That's from your federal government. We'll be talking with Kirby Anderson about that later in the program. Kirby, we want to start with, I know you follow the polls. I don't know if you eat your breakfast, you know, reading these polls or not, but the latest poll, this is the headline on the Drudge Report, and this is a Los Angeles Times Daybreak poll. It says now that Donald Trump is up 6 percentage points over Hillary Clinton. Voters were asked what the chance was that they will vote for Trump, Clinton, or someone else, and Trump is up 6 points. What do you make of that?
Well, again, we have to be real careful not to read too much into the polls, because polls are all over the map, because you can find a poll, for example, that actually would show Hillary Clinton up. But this, I think, shows a trend, and the trend is significant. In terms of some of the factors that are affecting the Clinton campaign, whether we talk about her health, whether we talk about the fact that she's not well-trusted. And I would say, Ed and Ray, that one of the things we might want to also warn our listeners is, even when you see the polls, recognize that they may underreport the support for Donald Trump. For those of us that have ever looked at polls, there is what is called the Bradley effect. And that goes all the way back to 1982, when Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley ran for office, and he was shown to be ahead in the polls. But when the vote took place, he lost. And they found that there were some people that weren't willing to say that they were not going to vote for the black candidate. And so I think there are two factors here. Number one, some people might say, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, but I'm not going to tell a pollster I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. And then some people might say, well, you know, I think the pollster wants me to say, I want to vote for the first woman to be president of the United States, Hillary Clinton, even though I'm not going to vote, or I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. So to keep that in mind, whatever percentage you give for Donald Trump, it could be higher because of what is oftentimes referred to as the Bradley effect. And so in some respects, the Trump campaign's got to feel pretty good, and especially since yesterday when he was in Canton, Ohio, he said, we're competitive in some of the states where Republicans haven't been competitive in decades, really kind of relating all the way back to the 1984 win by Ronald Reagan where he swept the country. So not only is he doing better in places like Ohio and Florida, the so-called swing states, he's competitive enough to cause the Clinton campaign to say, do we have to spend money in New Jersey? Do we have to spend money in Connecticut? We thought those were gimme states. And so you got to think about how that has played out over the next couple of months.
Kirby, how big a factor in all of this is the question about Hillary's health? Is that driving this swing in the polls? And if so, what is she going to do? You know, run laps in the gym, weightlift? How do you get out from
under
that?
You know, if you asked me that a month ago, because as Ed pointed out, we do this every month, I would have said, you know, health is not even on the radar screen. Even 2 weeks ago, I would have said, okay, we're now starting to see some people talking about this, but, you know, I wouldn't say it's in the top five issues that people are considering. Now, it's interesting how this video, cell phone video, has kind of changed people's perception. They've seen bits and pieces before that have made them wonder, but now this is even more significant, and it really gets back right to the trust factor. Let's face it, a high percentage of Americans do not trust Hillary Clinton, a significant percentage, but at least lower percentage of people do not trust Donald Trump, but neither of them have a great trust factor, but especially with her, when they say, well, this is just pneumonia, even people that support her go, is that really true? I mean, the fact that you even have some Democrats saying, well, should we be thinking about a plan B here? What if indeed she were to step down or her health would really fail? Should we be thinking about bringing Joe Biden in to run with Tim Kaine? So this is the big question, and it's not going to be easily resolved. And like you said, running laps, getting the doctor to say she's in perfect health, I think the American people are going, yeah, well, I'll have to wait and see. And so that certainly doesn't help a campaign either.
Well, and, you know, Kirby, the you know, changes in technology can really affect especially presidential races. It's, you know, kind of an old lesson now, but, you know, the switch between radio and television back in the Kennedy and Nixon debates in 1960, you know, altered perception, you know, and really changed the way presidential campaigns were run. Now with the the ubiquitous cell phone footage, I think it makes another change. A lot of these things that we'll be talking about here in this first 25 minutes or so of the program kind of are interlocking. We're going to be talking about the fact that there is the lowest ever trust in the news media in terms of a recent Gallup poll. Because what you have in the media is you have a lot of talking heads. You have Democratic spokespeople saying, Hillary's fine. Hillary's health is great. I mean, her doctor has just released another statement today saying she's, you know, fit as a fiddle. She's taking some medication. You have all these people talking, but the power of that footage over the weekend, I had heard people talking about it. We'd been texting back and forth. I had, you know, seen a couple of articles, but it wasn't until I saw that video footage, cell phone video footage of Hillary before she got into that vehicle that I thought, wow, this woman is sick. So you really have technology again changing or having at least the potential to change the way people view media reports and spokespersons who are trying to quell this fear or that fear. It really is a game changer, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, Robert George, of course, we've quoted from him at different times, has said that the cell phone video was the blue dress, what the blue dress did to Bill Clinton and showed that all the statements he had made were not true. This cell phone video did the same. And you have Jonah Goldberg writing that Hillary humiliated her flacks with their health deception, because like you said, you got people out there saying, oh, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing to see here. And then people see it and go, no, I think there is something to see here. And so this is, of course, the real challenge for the Clinton campaign. And as you point out, only so well, Ed, in the past, you could get away with some of this. Let's recognize that Woodrow Wilson was very, very sick. And for a while, essentially, the government was run by his wife. Franklin Delano Roosevelt had all sorts of health issues. And again, that was shielded from the press. Even as recently as John F. Kennedy, you know, some of the issues affecting him were there. Well, we're just in a different world. And so as a result, health is an issue. Mental health is an issue. Certainly how you appear on the debate stage. And let's recognize, really, essentially 10 days from now, there's a debate. And if Hillary Clinton loses her train of thought, gets confused, looks tired, looks, you know, a little bit haggard, that will not do well. And we did sort of get a preview of that when Matt Lauer did individual interviews with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton looked defensive and kind of upset. Donald Trump, he looked like he really enjoyed being there. Kind of like, yeah, I enjoy these questions. You know, I'll be glad to interact with on all that. And that kind of issue is important. And we have learned as speakers over the years that sometimes people will not remember what you say, but they will remember how they felt when you said it. And so sometimes you can say, and Ray knows this as a pastor, sometimes you can give a great sermon at the end. Next week, the only thing people remember is the story you told or the joke that you told or just the kind of experience they had when they went through hearing your sermon. And so in some respects, it almost doesn't matter what Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton say as much as how they say it and how confident they look and whether or not people feel like these are individuals that they could trust or whether or not they are deciding to stay home and not vote for either of them.
You know, Kirby, you've raised a very interesting point. We're 10, 11 days away from debate number one, which is going to be watched by, I mean, basically the whole country. And I guess the question is, which Donald Trump is going to show up and which Hillary? Will it be the Donald Trump who was could be condescending or, you know, angry or with a quick comeback? Or are we going to see more of the demeanor that he had with Matt Lauer? So if you could guess, take us inside the locker room for Trump and Hillary. What do you think? How do you think each one of them is going to approach the great question of even how they want to present themselves in the debate?
Well, again, I think the strategy is pretty simple, and that is Donald Trump, I think, gave you a preview of what he would like to do with Matt Lauer. But, of course, that was easy because Matt Lauer maybe challenged him a few times, but wasn't a big deal. Hillary Clinton wants to make him mad and wants to be able to reinforce this because even as they were doing that kind of point-counterpoint, which wasn't really a debate because each one was on the stage separately, it was about Commander-in-Chief. Well, if you look at the latest surveys on Commander-in-Chief, on almost every issue, Donald Trump does better than Hillary Clinton. They see him as a better Commander-in-Chief. They see him as an individual that will handle foreign policy better, which is interesting given that's been kind of her expertise. But if there's one place where Donald Trump did poorly, it was, do you trust him with nuclear weapons? You know, this has been the argument that's been made by the Clinton campaign. This guy is, you know, a blowhard. He's, you know, a volatile. If he gets upset about a Twitter feed, what can you imagine he would do if indeed we had some kind of international incident? Is he going to push the nuclear button? And, of course, that worked rather well, interestingly enough, in 1964 to suggest that Barry Goldwater would be a reckless person in the Oval Office. So that's going to be the attempt, to try to get him angry, to get him upset. It will be interesting to see whether or not that's the case because, as we all know, sometimes Donald Trump is like an adult with an adolescent inside his body that jumps out of him. And if he's going to show any kind of control, some kind of measured response, I think you're going to have a pretty good debate performance by him. On the other hand, of course, the big question is will, in the midst of this debate, will Hillary Clinton lose her train of thought? Will she have a coughing fit? Will she look a little bit confused? And if that's the case, that will be it for the campaign. On the other hand, if Donald Trump just blows up and looks like a blowhard and can't ever give you any specifics and just keeps getting badgered by the people and rolls his eyes time and time again, that could be a death knell for Donald Trump. And so for those people that have said in the past debates don't make a difference and they really just reinforce values, yes, but I can point to a few, probably the best one, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, where a poor debate performance, or of course, as you mentioned, Ed, going all the way back to Richard Nixon and John Kennedy, can actually make the difference as to whether or not you're the next president of the United States.
Well, and it's I think it's exactly right. And you know, Hillary Clinton in one debate during the primaries, you know, had that long bathroom break. I mean, even something like that, which, you know, for a woman her age, I'm just saying that probably can happen. But the perception linked to all this medical stuff, these health questions, could be devastating. And my understanding also from reading is that the Clinton campaign has hired some psychologists to try to give Hillary some idea of what issues seem to set off Donald Trump, to try to get under his skin in the debate. Because as you point out, you know, probably the biggest question for a lot of people is that temperament. And so this is all, it's strange, but so much about American politics, with as much information as we have available, 24/7 news, you know, cycles and just scads of, you know, talking heads and articles and blogs, with the information we have, so much comes down to perception, which is an emotional issue or an emotional response. It's kind of the, you know, the paradox of American politics in 2016.
Again, a lot of people that have analyzed many of those debates over the years have said it's a likability index. Well, both of these individuals have difficulty with that, but there is a sense in which, at least in terms of being personable, people that aren't turned off by Donald Trump, and that's a high percentage, but those that aren't find him as the kind of person that they wouldn't mind sitting across the table and talking with. And so even if the likability index doesn't work for either of them, the personality index does. And Hillary Clinton even the other day addressed this. You know I'm just not the kind of person that you just want to sit down and talk with. You know, I've had to protect myself all these years as being the only woman in the law school, or all these kinds of examples she's used. But as a result, she seems very distant and very cold. And it gets difficult to relate to a person like that. This was what worked so well for Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney looked like kind of a nice guy, and, you know, I could see him as president, but, gosh, I just, you know, the guy I want to have a beer with is Barack Obama, not Mitt Romney and not John McCain. And so sometimes that factor is important for people in the middle. This is what we're talking about, that middle group that will determine ultimately who the next president is.
Let me ask you this. And by the way, folks, we are talking with Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries. He's host of the Point of View broadcast, heard weekdays on AFR at 10 p.m. Central and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time. Kirby, let me just ask you this. In the news here the last day or so has been the maternity leave proposal by Donald Trump. Now, this is a little bit strange. This is, you know, one of the criticisms of Donald Trump has been he's not a true conservative. He, you know, some say he's not even a true Republican, but certainly some of his conservative qualifications for the GOP nomination, you know, were brought into question, especially during the primary season. Now, this maternity leave proposal sounds a lot like something you might get from the Democrats. What's your take on this?
Well, again, this is one of the conversations we had on Point of View yesterday. Penedexter was my co-host as we talked about this, and then I began to do some other interviews. But there are a couple of things to think about. First of all, everybody would agree that a corporation or a business could certainly say, yes, we'd want to provide maternal leave. And as a matter of fact, Ivanka Trump, when she was interviewed, the first question, one of the first questions was, well, does the Trump company provide that? Yes, they do. Even Ivanka's company does as well. So to allow individual companies to make that decision and to determine how long, because once you have a government mandate that says it must be 6 weeks, and now Hillary Clinton's talking about, well, I'm going to up the ante. Now it's going to be 12 weeks. Oh, my goodness. You then put a company in a difficult situation, because what if they say, well, sure, I'll give you paid leave for a couple of weeks, but then given the fact that you're going to be working from home and our business is the kind of one where you could work from home, let's set up a computer. And in other words, there are all sorts of variabilities in this 21st century workforce and workplace. And once you have this locked down by the federal government that say you have to provide 6 weeks, there is, of course, a big issue. And that's why in many cases they say this sounds a lot more like a Democratic issue where big government or big nanny takes control of your life. But even for the listeners out there that say, well, this sounds like a pretty good idea, think through the implications of this for just a minute. Suppose you're not a Fortune 500 company, or you're not even the Trump company, where you've got a fair amount of money. But suppose you're just a mom-and-pop print shop, and you've got a woman that has either been your receptionist, or maybe she runs the offset printer, or she runs the copy or whatever, and she is then supposed to get 6 weeks of paid leave. She's producing nothing in the company. You are just barely making ends meet because you're basically charging just a little bit more for the printing or copying of the paper. And now you have this enormous cost, and you have no way to recoup it because you're paying her as if she's there, but she's not providing anything. You say, well, that's what we should do. Well, the small company says to themselves, okay, well, we can't do anything about this this time, but, you know, the next time we have to hire somebody, if I see somebody that's 20-something and she's married and I think she's going to have a child, I will not hire her, even if she might be more qualified than the 20-something, 30-something guy who I know I will not have to pay maternity benefits to. And once you start walking down this road, you can say, yeah, it sounds like a really good idea. First of all, who's going to pay for it? Second of all, is this the role of government? Or third of all, would it have maybe even the unintended consequences of making it less likely that a small business or a company would hire a woman who might need maternity leave? Once you think through some of that, you begin to say, okay, this is a debate in Congress where we need to think a little bit more about some of the implications of what this actually entails.
And so, Kirby, too, the underlying issue behind Ed's question, do you at this point regard Donald Trump as a conservative or more of as a populist or a hybrid, or how do you look at him from the where does he fit on the spectrum, so to speak?
Yeah, and he's hard to label because he's really been a businessman all these years. I mean, he doesn't come to it with a sense of ideological purity like, say, a Ted Cruz. You know almost exactly what Ted Cruz is going to say about issues before he says anything. This is very different, and he also is very influenced by people around him. So the good news is that one of the most important influences in Donald Trump's life is going to be his vice presidential nominee, who's Mike Pence. And Mike Pence calls himself a Christian first, a conservative second, a Republican third. And on issues from life to marriage to the one we're going to talk about in just a few minutes, religious liberty, you just got to say Mike Pence checks off every single one of those boxes. Every one of our listeners to AFR would love Mike Pence, and to have him really have the ear of Donald Trump means that even though Donald Trump may not be in his core a conservative, or even close to it in many cases, he's going to be influenced by that. This maternal leave issue is influenced by the other significant influence in his life, and that's Ivanka Trump, because she has made it clear that this is really kind of her thing, and understandably so, because she has been a mom, and she's been a vice president of the Trump Organization, and so she's had to work, she's had to raise kids, and she really understands how important this is and believes that we're one of the few nations in the world, at least in the Western world, that does not provide maternal leave. So you're going to get sometimes policies that will come out that are very conservative, and frankly, a lot of those that have been influenced by Mike Pence are ones that we as the American Family Association can applaud. But every once in a while, Ivanka Trump, and this is kind of her issue, so once her influence on this is over, I'm not sure what else we're going to hear. But nevertheless, it's not only something that she believes in, frankly, it's going to be a way, I suspect, to buy some votes or to maybe get a few more single women or married women in the workforce to take a second look at Donald Trump.
Folks, we're going to come back. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries, host of Point of View. It's Fire Away with Kirby Anderson today. And we've got another half hour with the brain of Kirby Anderson. And that is always a treat for us. We're going to ask him a few more questions. We've got a blockbuster story on religious liberty and the U.S. federal government and the take of the Obama administration on just what you're practicing. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree.
Kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's the question. How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues, Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday. Woo.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. Donald Trump found himself in a very odd position in Flint, Michigan, dressed down in front of the television cameras by the Reverend Faith Timmons. She's the preacher at Bethel United Methodist Church. She scolded Mr. Trump for injecting politics into a campaign stop. Imagine that. The Reverend said he was supposed to thank her church for their good deeds, not bash Hillary Clinton. Sounds like the Reverend could use a sermon on humility. To his credit, Mr. Trump was gracious and did not cause a scene, unlike the partisan preacher. You see, last night I did some digging around and discovered the good Reverend may have played a little politics herself, writing on Facebook before the event she had planned to educate Mr. Trump. There's also a photo of Reverend Timmons with President Obama, hand in hand. I wonder if she educated the president like she did Mr. Trump. And now you know the rest of the story. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. My co-host is Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Folks, we want to let you know, you've probably been listening this week and have heard this information being passed along on various shows, but we do have Share-a-thons scheduled coming up in October 18 through 20th. October 18 through 20, those are our dates for Share-a-thon. And in the lead up to Share-a-thon, we always like to include on the air listener stories. So I'm going to give you a phone number here in just a moment if you'd like to call in and tell us how American Family Association, American Family Radio, has been used by God in your life. We would like to play your story, your testimony, on the air in the lead-up to Share-a-thon or even during Share-a-thon. Perhaps American Family Radio has inspired you to become more engaged in the culture war. Is your life different because of American Family Radio? Have we impacted your home or your workplace? Those are the kinds of testimonies we're looking for. The number to call, if you would like to tell us the impact American Family Radio has had on you or your family members, the number to call is 877-876-8893. That number again is 877-876-8893. You'll be walked through the prompts when you call that number, and you'll be informed on how you can leave it, how long it should be. We look for shorter testimonies, but our staff will clean up maybe testimonies that go a little too long, but we try to fit as many in as possible. So we'd like to hear your story. 877-876-8893. Share-a-thon is coming up. Again, those dates, October 18th, 19th, and 20th. And it's hard to believe, but October is right around the corner. All right, well, we are talking. Ed Vitagliano, Ray Pritchard, your co-host for Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're talking with Kirby Anderson, who's president of Probe Ministries, host of the Point of View broadcast, heard weekdays on American Family Radio from 9 to 11 Central Time. Kirby, one other story that I had mentioned before the break in our first 25 minutes with you was a new Gallup poll that states that Americans' trust in mass media sinks to a new low. And here's the lead paragraph from that Gallup poll story. It says, Americans' trust and confidence in the mass media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly has dropped to its lowest level in Gallup polling history, with only 32% saying they have a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the media. That is down just 8 percentage points from last year. Kirby, what is happening to make Americans' trust in the media crater like this?
Well, again, for our older listeners, and they might remember Walter Cronkite, and for our younger listeners, let me just explain that he was really kind of the dominant force in broadcast news. And so if Walter Cronkite said it, everybody tended to believe it. And there was really very little opposition to that because you essentially in the past had three networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC. And if they said it, that was it. And there wasn't an internet, and there wasn't a lot of cable news. There were some talk shows. In Point of View that I'm on today, it was started by Marla Maddox back in 1972. It was up on satellite even in the early 80s so that a lot of people could hear it. But this was pretty rare. And so as a result, there was really no one to challenge this sort of news monopoly. Then as the monopoly began to break down, there were still people that were practitioners who tried to at least be honest and fair. And I'll use one example. Ted Koppel used to do a show called Nightline, and I had a pretty good idea where he stood politically, but there were nights where you would have to say, I'm not sure where he stands, because he would ask very good questions of both sides. Well, that has changed dramatically as a result of the growth of talk radio, which we're enjoying right now, the growth of alternative networks on television like Fox News and all the rest, but also just now the incredible growth of the internet. And so when people, for example, the example we used in the first half hour, are hearing that Hillary Clinton is fine, and then they see a cell phone video that says, she doesn't look fine to me, and they see other clips that they can click on and see some places where she looks like she's having a seizure or all the time she's having a cough, they begin to say, well, I really don't trust you now because you're telling me, don't believe what your eyes tell you, just believe what I tell you, and that doesn't work very well for the American people. So as you pointed out, Ed, we've gone from just a monopoly of three networks to a sort of an oligopoly to then just a free market, then a development of the internet, and now with the cell phone videos, an opportunity for people to see that what they're being told isn't always the truth. And as a result, you've also had a growth of those who are advocacy journalists. Whereas you still have a few people that try to be fair, more and more just only have a bent. And when you turn on MSNBC, you're not really even expecting that the questions are going to be fairly ask of a conservative, and you look and see that you have four liberals and one conservative, if they even have a conservative. And on Fox News, you know, there's a little attempt more to be fair and balanced, but you sort of have a sense that the conservative ideas are going to get a little bit more play. And so as a result, that's why more and more people say, I really don't know who to trust anymore. And if nothing else, that's been good news for American Family Radio, because a lot of people say, I'm going to tune in and find out what you have to say, because I've pretty much given up on some of the people in broadcast media today.
You know, Kirby, I'm old enough to remember when Walter Cronkite, whom you mentioned, and also Huntley and Brinkley, and then whoever was on ABC at the time, I mean, those were the three major sources. Is that day, in your judgment, for all the reasons that you mentioned, is the day gone and will it not return? The day in which there's one man or two men or women, for that matter, two or three voices that are the most trusted names. Because it's the younger people, it's hard for them to understand how important Walter Cronkite was 30, 40 years ago. Is that day gone forever? And Is that
I think
good
it is for two reasons. Number one, because we have the pluralization of media and just the proliferation of media, and so it's hard to have any one person that really controls a very large segment. But obviously Bill O'Reilly has a very large segment of in cable, and Rush Limbaugh has a very large segment in radio, so you do have some of that. But the other thing working against it, Ray, is there is perhaps the most media-wise generation ever, the millennial generation, growing up. And because they have been exposed to so much more media, and they've seen people trying to sell them things, whether it's 640,000 television commercials that the average American teenager will have seen by the time he or she graduates from high school, they always have sort of the media antenna up, and they tend to be very skeptical. They're skeptical of institutions like the government, skeptical, frankly, of the church. And so in some respects, finding somebody that really is the trusted source is going to be more difficult. I don't deny that there may be someone that surfaces over time. And certainly when you talk about the most trusted people in America, you know, Billy Graham shows up on that list and a few others. But the bottom line is, most cases, there tends to be a higher level of skepticism on the part of the younger generation, and also just no kind of unifying event. The closest thing we have to a unifying event is maybe a Super Bowl party where everybody watches the Super Bowl together. But in the old days, there used to be a time where you had a majority of Americans watching whatever, the inauguration, a majority of Americans finding out what happened after John Kennedy was shot or whatever it might be. We might have a significant number of eyeballs a week from this Monday watching the debate, but it will not be anything like what we had in the past, just simply because there's so many other things to be watching on television and so many other venues that people can be involved with other than just sitting in front of the television.
Well, and I don't want this to be, you know, three old guys sitting around talking about the way it used to be, but some of our younger listeners may not be able to believe this, but there used to be a time when the major U.S. cities in this country had two major newspapers, a conservative and a liberal, and they delivered papers in the morning and in the evening. There were two editions, and people looked to those newspapers to be the, you know, kind of the echo chamber. You know, this is, I'm the conservative, so I get this newspaper. I'm the liberal, so I kind of lean on this newspaper. Kirby, you also have the factor for a lot of young people in this country. Kind of the Jon Stewart effect, although his program's no
right.
longer on, but a lot of young people got their news, got their take on what was happening from Jon Stewart or, you know, now Jimmy Kimmel or some of the other late night hosts. That's a kind of a, it's not that there weren't political cartoons before, but these kinds of people seem to have a far greater influence because a lot of young people just don't listen to them. They're not going to go to CNN or Fox.
That is very true. And, you know, and you were alluding to that because, you know, now we don't have Jimmy Stewart, Jon Stewart, I should say, but we do have Stephen Colbert. We have
right.
all sorts of other individuals that are sort of filling the gap a little bit. And so I do believe that you have a situation, number one, where they aren't necessarily news junkies, so they aren't listening to it anyway, watching it anyway. If they know anything about the news, they pick it up from Yahoo News in their smartphones or something like that, or elsewise they are in one way or another picking it up from what isn't even a serious news venue. And because the general attitude in those venues is to sort of make fun of individuals, that feeds into and reinforces that sort of skepticism of any kind of people in authority. And so this is why I think we're going to face that for quite some time, just because you have a much more media-wise millennial generation, which has also cut their teeth on all sorts of programs that sort of make fun of institutions. Think of, you know, Homer Simpson and the perception
right.
you have of family. Think of, as you said, Jon Stewart and Comedy Central. As a result, you tend to just be sort of skeptical about everybody and everything. You tend not to trust very much. And so this is, again, an answer back to Ray's question, why I think it's going to be difficult to ever go back to where you have sort of a trusted source. And this is why I think you've seen such an interest in Christian radio, in particular American Family Radio, There are just a lot of people said, and they call my program, and I'm sure they call you as well when you talk to people off air, I don't even have a television, or I don't even turn on the television, or I don't even believe what I see in the news. I wait to hear what you talk about on today's issues, and then maybe I'll believe it. But up until then, I'm not going to believe anything because I just don't know who to trust in America anymore.
Kirby Anderson is our guest. He's president of Probe Ministries. He's host of the Point of View broadcast that is heard weekdays on American Family Radio from 9 to 11 Central. Kirby, let me switch gears here. I had mentioned at the top of the program, and I don't know if you'd I'd sent this to you this morning. I don't know if I'd kind of sprung that on you, if you had already were on this.
This is one I want to talk about. Matter of fact, I've got Gary Bauer and Kelly Shackelford on Point of View today, and we'll be talking about Martin Castro. So I'll let you introduce who he is and why we should be so concerned.
Well, he's chairman of the commission I mentioned, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, at the top of the program. They have just released a report. And folks, this is the quote from Martin Castro. It's a little bit long. That makes for bad radio, but this is chilling what he said. Quote, the phrases religious liberty and religious freedom remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any form of intolerance. That's a statement that was included in this report. He went on to say, today, as in the past, religion is being used as both a weapon and a shield by those seeking to deny others equality. This generation of Americans must stand up and speak out to ensure that religion never again be twisted to deny others the full promise of America. Now, Kirby, I don't like to overstate things, but for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights to basically say, when it comes to religious liberty and what the U.S. government says are issues regarding equal rights, religion loses. This is frightening.
It really is. And what's so interesting is the reason this report came out was because another member of the commission, Peter Kersenow, actually wanted to try to see if they could address this very important issue, because our listeners, if they're familiar with some of the conversations we've had about this in the past, know that there have been people that have been associated with the Obama administration who essentially have said, I'm just giving you a paraphrase, but some of them said almost directly, that if there's a conflict between religious rights and religious liberty and gay rights wins. And so what this commissioner, the good one, the one that descended from this, was trying to do is see if we could find a way to begin to help people sort through what do we do when there is a conflict between homosexuality and religious rights, because we have the bakers, the florists, the photographers, we have the innkeepers, we have just a long growing list of individuals who are being persecuted because they say, well, I just really can't in good conscience actually perform a same-sex wedding ceremony or provide services for that. Well, instead, what you got is Martin Castro making the argument that, well, these words like religious liberty and these kinds of ideas and religious freedom are really just code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, and Christian supremacy. And I love what Gary Bauer said the other day here. Just days before we have the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, where we were attacked by Islamic supremacists, you have the chairman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights worried about so-called Christian supremacists, right, whatever that is. And I just think it illustrates again how there is such a hostility, even if I can use a big word, antipathy towards any person with religious faith. And they see your claims for having conscience or religious faith or religious liberty as just a code word for you being just a despicable person who is discriminating against people that deserve their full rights.
So, Kirby, let's flesh this out just a little bit. If Martin Castro and the people like him, if he has his way, what would be the impact down the road, maybe not tomorrow, but perhaps the day after tomorrow, for churches, for ministries, for programs like Point of View, for networks like American Family Radio? Down the road, if he has his way, what could be the impact of this squelching of religious liberty?
Sure. let's face it, he doesn't have much power. Matter of fact, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights actually did some good in the past dealing with racial discrimination. But the last few decades, it's been a place where some pretty outrageous things have been said and done. But if people that believe like him are in office, and that would be people like Hillary Clinton, and the kind of people that she would put on the Supreme Court, the kind of people that she would put in the Justice Department and a variety of other areas, then you would certainly begin to see that religious liberty would lose all the time. If it weren't right now for groups like First Liberty, Liberty Council, American Center for Law and Justice, and some others really fighting these battles and winning them, we would already be in this kind of set of circumstances. And so one of the other comments that I thought was interesting is last week at the Values Voter Summit, you had Gary Bauer talking about this election as kind of the Flight 93, you know, in other words, the one where we had to fight the terrorists. And what he's saying is that really we always tend to say that this is the most significant election in American history. But Ed and Ray, you know that this is the case because it will determine who will be on the Supreme Court, because the next president, he or she will have a chance not only to fill the seat by Antonin Scalia, but if you look at the ages of three other Supreme Court justices, it is potentially possible that the next president could appoint four justices to the Supreme Court, not to mention hundreds of others to the federal court. And those individuals either believe some of the things Martin Castro said or they don't believe it. And that will determine the future, I think, of religious liberty in America.
Well, and it brought to mind a quote just this year from, this is back in May, from Harvard Law professor Mark Tushnet. I'm sure you probably covered this. He wrote, and it seems clear to me that there's a sense of triumphalism amongst secular progressives in this country. They see the way to the full bore remaking of American culture as theirs for the taking. And what this Harvard Law professor said is he recommended that liberals no longer hide their true intentions. And he actually said, quote, "The culture wars are over. They lost. We won." And then he went on to say, well, how should we treat these people like Christians? He said, we need to take a hard line. And he said, quote, "Taking a hard line seemed to work reasonably well in Germany and Japan after 1945. So this guy, Harvard Law professor, his sentiments, you know, match hand in glove, you know, with those that Martin Castro was saying from the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. But this Harvard Law professor was saying, look, Christians are no better than Nazis or imperialistic Japanese. We need to treat them as the losers and not try to accommodate them at all. This is scary stuff.
It certainly is. And again, some have suggested that what we do is treat individuals who believe in religious liberty and have problems with the gay agenda as segregationist. And so right. To use another example, even from America, to just say, you know, they don't deserve a place at the table. And I think what's so interesting is I noticed this over the years when I was speaking on college campuses. We went from a time where the liberals would say, you know, well, you've heard my point of view, so I wanted to give this opportunity, Kirby Anderson, to speak and give a different point of view, to then the argument, no, these points of view aren't even deserving of an opportunity to be addressed. And so what's been happening on the campus now is happening in the culture wars and sort of the argument that, well, we said we believed in pluralism. That's when we didn't have the opportunity to enforce our views. But now that we have people like Barack Obama and potentially Hillary Clinton in office, we don't have to pretend in pluralism anymore. We don't have to say, well, we will give everybody an equal opportunity. No, we're going to tell you which ideas you should hold to, and we're going to vilify anybody who doesn't agree with us. And we've seen this happen even with some of their fellow liberals who maybe would stray from the plantation a little bit. So if you wonder what would happen to Christians, just look what sometimes they do to even individuals who would not agree with most of the things we talk about here on American Family Radio, but nevertheless vilify them for even speaking out.
Kirby, let's just take this and apply it to the current presidential election. You've made some comments about Hillary and what's going to happen if she gets in office. How confident are you that if Donald Trump is elected, and clearly the race is tightening up. If he gets into office, how confident are you that he's going to be a defender of religious liberty?
Well, there are a couple of points. Number one, he has given us a list, which is the first time I can remember in American history, where he gave us a list of who he would appoint to the Supreme Court. There were 11 on that list. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. You can talk to people like Kelly Shackelford and others that are legal experts, and they have to say that we like, and basically I would agree with him, 9 of the 11 very well. In other words, they're really great nominees. There are other 2 that were kind of like, well, okay, they're okay, but I would pick something better. Now, where did that list come from? Well, it came from the Heritage Foundation, and it came from the Federalist Institute. And the Federalist Society basically is made up of very conservative jurists. As a matter of fact, the other day I had Dr. Richard Land on the program, and he said that the Federalist Society is even more conservative than I am, which I don't know if it was a joke or not, but it just shows you that Donald Trump is getting his suggested nominees from groups that we would highly respect. Then, of course, I mentioned he has a vice presidential nominee, and if anybody thinks that Mike Pence is going to just sit around there like a potted plant for the next 4 years while Donald Trump does anything he wants, they don't know Mike Pence very well. And so I think you're going to also see an individual that has demonstrated over the years, both as a talk show host, as a think tank individual, as well as a member of Congress, and then now, of course, as governor, to really uphold some of these various ideas and values. Will Donald Trump make some appointments that cause all of us to roll our eyes? Yeah, I'm sure of that. Will we be pleased with most of them compared to any of those we would have got from Hillary Clinton? I think we know the answer to that as well, because the people that he has surrounded himself with, the people who would know a lot about judicial issues, are certainly the individuals that we would agree with. And so I have more confidence that, indeed, if he's going to take the advice of those people whose advice he's been taking so far, we're going to see a much better set of appointments to the federal judiciary than we would see under Hillary Clinton's presidency.
And as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, Kirby, you know, we dealt with a story here. I'm sure you've dealt with it as well, that since President Obama has been in office, 70% of the federal judiciary, we're not even talking about the Supreme Court, 70% of the federal judiciary is now made up of liberal judges who do not view the Constitution as a, you know, from a strict constructionist point of view. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, under a Hillary Clinton presidency, not just the Supreme Court, but all those other cases when you say, well, this is unconstitutional, we're taking this to court, all those other cases that might not ever even make it to the Supreme Court are now going to be in the hands of a very liberal federal judiciary. Listen, Kirby, we are out of time. Our guest has been Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries. He's host of the Point of View broadcast, heard weekdays on American Family Radio from 9 to 11 p.m. Central Time. Kirby, let our listeners know where they can go if they want to read more of your stuff or find out what you're up to, or if you're speaking at a conference, how can they find out information?
Well, first of all, I'm the host of a show called Point of View, so go to pointofview.net. You can get my daily commentaries, including a commentary that's coming out next week on this issue of Martin Castro. And then, of course, I'm president of Probe Ministries, so you can also go to probe.org. So pointofview.net and probe.org. And, guys, it's been great to be with you today.
Well, thank you, Kirby. Appreciate your insights. Always appreciate your insights. And keep fighting the good fight on the front lines, Kirby. And we'll see you back here on Today's Issues next month.
Thank you.
Well, Ray, that is quite an hour. I know a lot of our listeners may feel kind of overload. We hit a bunch of topics.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on, Ed, that we need to talk about.
And like we talked about the news media, it's hard to find places you can trust for news and information, certainly from a Christian perspective, and that's what we try to do here at American Family Radio. OneNewsNow.com, the American Family Association Journal. We try to have all sorts of outlets for news for you. Folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news, speaking of news, and Ray Pritchard and I will be back with more.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.